Welcome to the Water Cooler Podcast. My name is Brandon, and today with me in the studio, we have intern Rob, Caleb, and Jeremy, our other executive interns. Rob's probably an executive intern, too.
Yeah, I think we're all executive interns.
Good. And then chief executive interns. And then also with us today is a special guest and one of our friends. You want to introduce yourself, sir? Give the power to you.
Well, hey, everybody. My name's Na Chum, and knowing you guys for a good couple of years, I'm happy I could join the podcast today.
And today we're going to talk about being a dad or parenting.
They're kind of the same.
We can talk about a little bit of both.
Yeah. I mean, I mean, a dad is a parent.
Yeah. A dad is a parent. You know, I feel like you guys could have just picked up anyone off the street and been like, hey, are you a dad? I hope I can hopefully, you know, instill some knowledge. You know, by far not an expert. I've got my 2-year-old son, Ellis, and, you know, parenting with my wife, Courtney. So it's kind of an adventure. We're kind of learning as we go a little bit, and hopefully we can share a little bit of what we've learned.
I don't feel like I've ever met a parent who said, like, I knew exactly what I was doing. I feel like it's definitely like a learn on, like, as you go type of profession.
It's literally the same thing that someone else told me. So I asked for tips, and he's like, dude, the best tip that I can give you is to not ask for tips. Just do it. It's never the same.
Yeah.
For everyone.
I think one of our good friends, Mr. Heller, told me, he's like, don't even attempt to feel like you're going to be able to, like, learn what you need to do, because everything you learn is like so small to everything else that's actually going to happen. But with that being said, with Caleb being a future dad or a dad on the way, I will turn it over to kind of you two to kind of riff with each other on being a dad soon. Caleb, you can ask him questions. I'll chime in if I can think of any. And I think we can just go from there.
Yeah, I guess, Nah, I have a question for you. So let's start at the beginning. Like, what... not too far in the beginning, you know. I don't want that many details.
Congrats on the sex, by the way.
But
I was so pressured to say that. But okay,
the 9 months after. what was your initial feeling when you got the news that you're going to be a dad?
Congratulations, by the way, Caleb. I don't think I've ever told you in person congratulations on being a dad. We got to get you your pair of white Nikes to, you know, formally initiate you. But what did I feel during that time? It's kind of a crazy whirlwind, right? And you're right. You don't really know what you're going to expect. In reality, your whole world really does kind of change. Everything that you know, you kind of start flowing with your instincts on what's about to happen. And if you're anything like me, you do the best you can to prepare, right? You get the nursery ready, you start getting settled in. You know, you start kind of trying to introduce this new thing to the world that it's about to happen to you as best as you can before it happens. So you kind of start getting used to certain things. And of course, a lot of the 9 months during the pregnancy is about, helping out your wife and kind of picking up some of the slack and trying to support them through it. Cause you know, they're going through so much, whether they say it or they don't, they're going through a lot and you got to kind of be there for them for that.
Yeah, of course. So what, I guess, what was the most challenging aspect right away once your baby was born?
I mean, Ellis's story is a little bit different, right? Because he got, born a couple weeks too early and got flown out to Rochester. And so we weren't together as a family initially at the very beginning. That definitely caused, some stress and trying to figure out what to do, what our plan of action is. You know, Courtney's still got to recover and get out of the hospital. Does that mean I go out to Rochester alone? You know, luckily we were able to get discharged from Mankato and make our way to Rochester quite quickly. When we moved past kind of the hospital part of it, the biggest challenge for me is really about, you know, that it's going to take a lot of time and a lot of commitment and some personal self-sacrifice to be a parent or be a dad. And sometimes trying to take those certain sacrifices maybe easier said than done. And I think, it kind of took me a while to kind of start to realize the amount of sacrifice that parents take, whether it's sleep or time or, you just have interests that you want to make time for but can't because you're trying to, take care of a whole new person in this world. So the part of self-sacrifice is a lot, I think, for anyone. And, huge shout out to even single parents out there. I don't know how they do it. I'm happy and lucky to have the partner that I do with Courtney and that we're able to kind of figure out a balance between it all. But I would say that was most difficult for me personally.
I can hear the brownie points being scored in the background as you said all that. I'm just joking. So sleep, time, personal interests. Obviously that's a lot to adjust to. But I guess, in light of all that, what were maybe some of the more fulfilling or memorable experiences, when becoming a dad?
Oh gosh, there are just so many. And it's honestly, it's kind of that part that you get to go back and kind of play with your inner child a little bit when you have a kid. And for some people, that's probably something that they maybe have not thought about or have gotten to experience very much of, because that's all you want to do when you have a kid, is that you just want to, make their experience as best as it possibly could be. And that also means kind of getting in touch with, the kid in you a little bit again. So that's a lot of fun seeing him develop, learn new things, experience new things. I remember going out on walks on our stroller and he's just pointing at trees and leaves and things that I pass by every single day that he is literally seeing for his first time. And, they're just these giant, it's just giant pieces of nature that he's getting to experience for the first time and kind of the marvel that he has about it. That is just, some of the most fun, that I get to be the one to introduce those things to him. I get to see him learn and grow and develop. And I'm starting to kind of be in this phase as a father myself, where I'm starting to reflect on, how is he processing his emotions and getting to learn these things. And it's kind of reflecting on, how do I process my emotions? How do I deal with when I have things bottled up that I can't let go of? And, Ellis is 2 years old. It's resulting in a lot of tantrums, a lot of big, strong outbursts of emotion that he simply can't process completely. And although those times are difficult, it also makes me kind of go back to reflect about, gosh, like, people deal with these same emotions as these children do, but we just have different coping mechanisms. Or some of us maybe have very poor coping mechanisms based on, parents that we've had in the past, or the parents that we've had and how they taught us to deal with it. But then it also makes me think about, how am I gonna do better? How am I gonna allow him to be able to process the world as he's taking it in for his first time?
Yeah. That's super interesting, because actually, we still have a few more months until our little girl is going to be born. And the other day I was thinking about it some more, and it kind of echoes what you said. I was just thinking, like, wow, every, like, the whole outside view is going to be super interesting with how this baby and, you know, within a couple of years, toddler is going to, like, perceive the outside world. And being able to, like, study and, like, try to understand their reactions and interactions with the environment is going to be extremely interesting. That's one of the things that I'm going to look forward to the most. But then also, I've been thinking about a lot of how I plan on getting them involved and, like enabling them to experience different things. I'm thinking, like, you know, I guess when I was like thinking back of what my parents did, and I think sports was like a big thing on how they tried to get me to experience new things. You know, I don't want to just limit my kid just to sports initially. And I was wondering if there was anything that you've done or have been or plan on doing with providing those like outside experiences.
Interesting. Definitely interesting talking about, you know, kind of like activities or hobbies. I think naturally we all kind of impart on our kid, you know, things that we've already experienced, things that we already like and enjoy. I think a big piece of it is just observation, right? What are they taking interest in? What are they kind of showing, like, you know, what are they already good at? We're not quite at the age of looking at, you know, sports as much. You know, he's still working on his gross motor, fine motor skills to kind of be able to be better at those things. We're just starting at the stage of kicking balls and jumping right now at 2 years old and kind of working on those things. So we're not quite there at that level. But honestly, just I think right now me and Courtney have done a really good job just combining our interests, things that we enjoy doing. We found that he really enjoys art, chalking. We got him an easel when he turned 2 years old. And I think he's had a lot of fun with that. Anytime that there's art or colors or crayons. And you're right. Exposure is very important. It makes me think back on, for those of you that are listening, you know, I've got a little bit of the psychology background. So you think back to the Minnesota Twins studies, right? Where they had genetic twins, but they were reared apart, right? So they had different parents and kind of this whole study of the interplay of nature/nurture. You know, they don't really like to say nature versus nurture anymore. It's kind of the two together. And what they found is that even though they had, you know, overall these twins with the same genetic makeup, when they met several years later, they turned out to be completely, you know, different people, right? That maybe they had some similarities in interests and predispositions to things that they're good at, but because they were brought up in different areas, exposed to different elements of life, it also brought out, you know, different expressed genes that they had that maybe not the other was had the opportunity to be exposed to. And so we always find, especially at an earlier age, I really saw it interesting how when we brought Ellis to new experiences, whether it's going to a store or taking him out to the lake or, you know, going to the beach or his first time at the playground, he just developed, you know, new abilities that we got to see a lot of firsts in new environments. Whereas, you know, if we stayed inside for a long time, you know, things kind of stayed stagnant a little bit. So getting out there, going out and doing stuff, I think a lot of parents want to have that time, of course, as a family to stay in together. But it's also important to, you know, get out there, have them be able to experience new things and it's kind of this weird conflict where you want to have routine. Obviously, routine is great for children. Having a stable living environment is important, but also having those opportunities to experience.
Yeah, now that I kind of talked through that a little bit more, it kind of made me realize that I think a lot of what I was exposed to growing up was what my parents were kind of interested in, which is kind of funny to think about. And I think it's going to be super important to me to just throw a lot of different things at the kid. Hopefully I don't overwhelm him, but I think I'll be able to not physically throw things, but just to get them exposed to different aspects and opportunities out there.
I got a,
go ahead.
I got a question kind of for both of you. Ultimately, did you have like a conversation or sit down and like, how did you know that you were financially ready to have a kid? Did you sit down and think like, well, I'm not going to have this kid and it's just going to be free. Like there's expenses that come with it. But did you kind of like ever have that conversation, or did you just kind of internally kind of knew that you were at that point?
So I think I guess I can just go first quick here. But Jordan and I, like before, before we even got married, like we were thinking, or we were even talking about it, like, you know, for the first year after we get married, we kind of just want to do our thing and travel a little bit, have some fun. But then like we'd start trying, after about a year, and that's just what it ended up being. And I think we've both been like, fortunate enough to have good jobs, so we didn't have to worry about the money aspect as much. But so yeah, there was definitely some planning that went into it. Wasn't like, oh yeah, let's do it now. It's like on the whim, like, yeah we want to do it.
Yep.
But, it was definitely more pre-planned.
Mr. Nah.
You know, it was a little bit of planning, of course. Part of it is definitely, you know, we were having a stable environment. We have our home. Obviously, you know, finances are an important part of the decision, but it wasn't all of it for us. As long as we were, you know, kind of steady with where we were, we had consistent jobs.
Yep.
A big aspect of it, honestly, was kind of the medical part. You know, Courtney, as a type 1 diabetic, you know, definitely starts reaching larger risk factors later in life when it comes to complications with pregnancy. And we'd always been determined to start a family. And I think at some point we just decided, hey, I think, you know, if it's going to happen, you know, let's start looking at it here sooner than later. And I think, you know, we were very happy with what ended up happening.
Yeah. And I'd probably say probably the financial side is probably just like every other aspect of being a parent. Like you can plan, but the chances of what you planned it's going to cost probably aren't going to happen. Like there's always going to be a curveball.
Yeah, that's totally true. I think what we definitely did a little bit of research on Google just about like what it costs per month on average to have a kid. And it made me wonder, like, what the hell are people paying for their kids? Because like, outside of like, it was like outside of like medical bills, like it seemed like on, like there was one article that I read where it was like outside of medical bills, like some families were spending like 13 grand a year on their kids. And I was like, holy
daycare.
Crap.
Yeah, holy crap. Probably.
It's most of it's probably daycare. Yeah, so we just toured a daycare recently. And you probably know this already. Maybe you do. I don't know if you use a daycare or not. But yeah, we initially for the first like 2 years, like when your kid's an infant are the most expensive years. It seems like when we're looking at daycares, at least where we are, the demand for daycare is a lot higher. It's a lot younger of a community. So like you're kind of forced to pay for 5 days of daycare, whether you like it or not, even if your kid's going to be at your house for like two out of the five working days of the week. So yeah, definitely a bit more expensive up front.
Yeah, I feel like every time, like the first time I saw the price of daycare, I was like, shit, I'm in the wrong business.
Yeah, man.
But then I was like, oh, crap. I would have to, like, manage a bunch of kids. And my guess is the insurance probably isn't cheap either. So I was like, ah, I'm good. I don't need to start my own daycare.
Yeah, that's probably completely true. So nah, a little bit of an alternative question here. Do you still have pets? And if so, how did they adjust when you brought home a baby initially?
Oh, great question. Yeah, so I have two cats, Tolkien, who's my oldest cat, and then Kiara, who's my younger orange kitty girl. Tolkien is still adjusting. When Ellis first came, Tolkien would not sit in the same room as Ellis.
No.
they've gotten more familiar. They'll sit next to each other. Ellis will be able to touch Tolkien, but not for very long. Nothing like what me and Courtney experienced with Tolkien. And Kiara is completely the opposite. She's just like bubbly and friendly towards him. Of course, both of my cats have claws, and so that's still a little bit to get used to for Ellis, and making sure that everything is still safe. And Ellis truly loves the pets and the cats. He says kitty, and it's just he wants them to love him so much, and it's tough for him to not be liked by Tolkien all the time. And sometimes Kiara is just too social and kind of too much in your face. So it's kind of still a little bit of both worlds with us.
Okay. Well, that's interesting, because I also have two cats, Slim and Lila. Slim's a boy and Lila's a girl. And Slim's the social one and Lila is not. So it'll be interesting to see what happens. I guess what I was most worried about was the cats, like, trying to lay on the baby, because, like, they're, like, Slim's especially, like, really social and, like, just like to snuggle and doesn't really know his boundaries. So definitely might be putting a gate around the baby when it's on the floor or something. Some sort of barrier for a little bit until they kind of get used to the baby and, like, understand that it's like delicate.
Did you have to baby-proof your house?
To some degree, right? We have baby gates in my house. We have a gate to the stairs that we can put up and down. Ellis can very easily climb up and down the stairs. But not much of our upstairs is very baby protected, baby guarded. So we pretty much monitor him anytime if he's upstairs. Obviously, you know, outlets, we started, he knows where the snacks are. He loves opening cabinets. And so, you know, we've started to add locks to those, especially, you know, to like under the sink cabinets and things like that. But yeah, baby proofing is, we've been pretty relaxed with it. We monitor him quite a bit. Of course, you know, just kind of the basic outlets, making sure and checking. You know, we don't have like bumpers on corners or anything like that so much, but
yeah,
it's kind of baby proofed.
I mean I think it's more than baby proofed. Like some of those things, it's like I've been at people's house, it's like I can't even get into this goddamn cabinet. And it's like, I guess it's also protecting a baby, but I also want to know how to get in here.
There's some, definitely some interesting mechanisms for like door handles and different notches for cabinets and things like that. So yeah, it can be a little bit of like it's like a puzzle or a test every single time you want to open a door sometimes.
So something that, this is a little bit of a different topic, but something that I've seen some parents do, and this was kind of newer to me, is like implementing quiet time, where they'll just like have like put their toddler in like their room just to have like some peace and quiet and just like let them like play with their toys or do a puzzle kind of a deal. To just kind of get away from like everyday stimulation, just like have a moment to relax for like 30 minutes. Is that something that you've done? Mm-hmm. Is that something you've heard of? Like how, if so, has it, I don't know if there are any benefits to doing it.
I haven't heard of or practiced that specifically. I know early on when we were doing, some sleep training for Ellis, so we could put him down without too much of a fuss, have him sleep through the night. It's kind of getting him more familiar with his room. Obviously, we spend a lot of time in our living room at our house. And so adding some, making him familiar with his own room, what he has, what things are, so when we turn off the lights at night, it's not just like a mysterious room that he hasn't been in all day. It's something, you can kind of, he kind of gets a connection with the room in that way. A really great point about, external stimuli, so many screens in our life, you've got to bet that when kids are watching or babies are watching, although they can't understand the communication or the words that we're using, they're reading the body language, right? And a lot of times, whether we know it or not, or how much we do it or not, there's usually a screen or a phone in front of us. And so just a dedicated time to put those down, quiet time, we'll read a book. We'll play with toys with him. We'll hang around just right before bed so we can kind of start to wind down and not have that in front of him as much. We accept it as a part of, the modern world and life. But we definitely want to, kind of create a transition from normal time to quiet time to bedtime. So we can kind of make things easier.
I got I'd say a question that we can wrap up with. At what age do you have to start listening to their music? Because I don't know how many times I can hear Baby Shark without having to lose my mind.
The trick is that you don't listen to music that you, that you hate, like Baby Shark. Because I don't think Ellis, I don't know, maybe daycare's had him listen to it once. But he's never asked for Baby Shark or anything like that. We don't do the, Coco Melon on Netflix? We don't do that stuff either. We do listen sometimes. It's really great if he's having a tantrum or in the car and crying. It's really calming, something familiar to him that will play songs from shows that he watches or enjoys or knows.
Just throw on some Slipknot and
see
how he reacts to that.
So it's already happening, honestly, yeah.
Slipknot?
Or like the Game of Thrones soundtrack? I don't even know if there's music in that. I've never seen it, but... or like just like the Seinfeld open on repeat, just a bunch of bass lines.
Oh my God. You just kind of like put that in their brain, and sometime way down in the future, they're going to hear it and be like, I know that for some reason.
Yeah. Well, I know my one brother, his kids love like Queen, Billy Joel, like Elton John. And I'm like, that's so weird. But then I'm like, well, the music I listen to is probably like rap music. So you probably can't introduce a kid to that for quite a while. But like those artists, like I would say that there's probably, if you truly listen to all the lyrics, there might be some bad stuff, but I don't think kids are old enough to really recollect what the song is probably truly about. So that's like the one thing I've always been like worried about. I'm like, I'm going to lose my mind having to listen to Baby Shark just on repeat for like the next 18 years.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess kind of like what you said, if you just don't show them that music, then hopefully they never find it.
Yeah, it's about delicately, exerting your control where you can, right? You want them to, of course, express themselves, be who they are, you know, you want them to kind of show you who they are rather than trying to impose everything on them. Mm-hmm. But obviously for your own sanity, you want to be able to, you know, have that control in certain places. But I've definitely stepped into the car with Courtney and Ellis, and, you know, we've got kids songs playing, and I'm just like, this is my new reality. This is parenting. This is being a dad. So, yeah, it's definitely crazy to step into sometimes.
Stemming off your new reality, how has your social life changed with having a kid now versus what it was before? And then what advice could you give to Caleb on that experience for you?
We try really hard to not, you know, we try really hard not to have it get in the way as much as we can. We try to not make it always like an excuse to be out, to not be out with other people. And I think, you know, there's a lot of value, like I said earlier, to just exposing Ellis to new experiences, whether, you know, we'll call the Nelsons and we'll drive out just for a weekday and have lunch with them. You know, that's something that we did early on when Ellis was really young, and we stayed over, we ended up staying the night. And so it's just kind of like, it is what you make it. Of course, you know, you want to keep them comfortable you want to keep them safe as much as you can, and make sure you have plans. Of course, if you have supportive family, that helps. If they're watching over the young baby or if they're watching over the baby while you're away, that really helps to have, you know, family and support and friends. We've been lucky to have a lot of friends be willing to stay the night and watch Ellis for us while we've been up in the cities and, you know, with friends and, or for concerts and shows. And so, we really try not to make it get in the way. I think a lot of people sometimes want to use that as like a, hey, we don't want to socialize or be out. But I think if you make an effort for it, I think other people recognize that as well. I think our friends recognize, hey, you know, we really make an effort to be friends with you guys and hang out and be with you guys, even though we have a kid. And I think that's appreciated. I think that's my answer.
So like you haven't been able to go out for two for ones though in a while.
I think honestly, it's just something that I'm not, I would rather just, do drinks at home or drinks at friends' houses and spend the money. You know, we're lucky that we have a lot of hobbies that don't cost us a lot of money to be able to manage everything that we have. But it's just not something I'm really interested in going out. I mean, I'll go out for a drink and things like that and two for ones to socialize, but it's not something that I'm willing to do like every weekend, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah. I think this was a good episode, so we can kind of wrap it up, but definitely thank you for coming on and sharing your dad wisdom / parenting wisdom with us. I bet Caleb got some new tidbits that's going to help him.
I am completely ready now to have this baby. And thanks, Nah.
Yeah. No, definitely. I'm really always happy to share and talk about it. Like, honestly, in the phase of parenthood that I'm in, the big thing I'm thinking about is just, they talk about terrible twos and tantrums and outbursts, but like, I'm really trying to like reposition and think about, you know, he's got so many emotions and he doesn't have the words to communicate what he's feeling. And sometimes adults don't even handle feelings or emotions as well as others. And so like to expect him to have this feeling that he wants to just scream and yell, and you've got to be able to talk him through that. I watched Brené Brown on HBO Max. It's called Atlas of the Heart. And she quotes Antonio Damasio. And he says, "We are not thinking machines that feel. We are feeling machines that think." You know, if you kind of let that sink in, you know, like Ellis is not someone who's going to think logically through problems or critically think about what's going on around his surroundings. You know, those are kind of tools and things that we need to equip him with. You know, we really need to be able to allow him to learn how to process through the emotions, and, you know, some of that logical thinking, critical thinking, those skills will come later. And so I think that's what a lot of the heart of parenting is, you know, trying to help them work and process through the world.
Yeah, definitely. Well, again, thank you. It was great to catch up as well.
Thanks, Nah.
Thanks, guys.
And
Brandon's there? Yeah. I didn't even hear him that much.
Yeah, man, parenting's not my thing. So.
Well, with that, we can wrap it up.
Hey, I'm the truth, I'm the truth. I could buy it, but it's just a rental. It's not a good investment. Being bad with your money is being good at flexing. They always chasing a bag, I guess they couldn't catch it. They trying to be like me, but it's not a good impression. I used to get on instrumentals just to get it out my mental. I was handing out my demos and they wouldn't check it. They told me I'd never make it, but now they get the message. That's important information, so I wouldn't text it. They want to get a reply, they want screenshots, but they won't get a response, not even three dots. These sheep talk, no lying, they throwing cheap shots. I had to cut some people off, I had to detox. I keep talking in my head, I got deep thoughts. On the steps where me and Navy did the beatbox. Been old school like Reeboks with knee socks. Corbin know I fuck them up when the beat drops. I'm coming back more level headed.
This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any decisions, please consult a professional.